Welcome to the eLaborate Topics podcast, where we focus on lab-specific strategies for medical laboratory professionals. We're proud to be the healthcare detectives that work behind the scenes to get the results needed to influence medical decisions. Let's grow together and jump right into the lab.
Hi, friends. Welcome to another episode of eLaborate Topics. We are your hosts, Tywana Wilson, Stephanie Whitehead, and Lona Small. We're excited to bring to you another awesome roundtable where today we're going to be talking about training and competency. Training and competency, especially competency, is one of the biggest things that comes up in regulatory inspections as an area for deficiency. And so we're going to give you some of our best practices. We're going to talk to you a little bit about what we do, what training is, what competency is. So come on in, grab your seat, and get ready for this amazing show. If you have not already, make sure you share it out. Share it out with all of your friends, your teams, your mentees, and everybody else that could benefit from hearing this topic. We have over 100 episodes in our library catalog. And so go back, a lot of topics that'll be helpful for somebody new in the field or somebody that has been in the field and interested in learning another way. One thing that's very exciting for us, and I think we talked about it on a previous episode, is that we are now collaborating with LabVine. So in addition to directimpactbroadcasting.com, your favorite podcast platforms, you can catch up on eLaborate Topics on LabVine. So go on over to LabVine. You can grab your free membership where there are podcasts, webinars, training courses, and other opportunities for you to develop as a laboratory leader. So let's get into today's topic. We're talking about training, development, and what is training? What is competency? And I know for some people, they feel like it's one in the same, like training and competency is the same thing, and they really serve as two different purposes. So when we think about training, let's think about the development of a new team member. So this training occurs before patient testing begins. It's usually done once the employee have started within an organization and within an organization, and to allow them to get development on a new instrument process or a new skill within that laboratory. And so it doesn't require the use of all six elements of competency, which some people like to incorporate some of those elements, but per CAP, it is not a requirement as part of that initial training. So if you were to get a new employee into your laboratory, you would go through your training period, which could vary depending on the organization on that timeline, and go through your training checklist or your skills checklist for that particular instrument or test system. Then when you think competency, think competency more so as application. So this occurs after the person has had their initial training. It occurs after they have started to do patient testing on their own. And there's ongoing assessment. So if you have a new hire, they would have the semi-annual competency assessment and annually, and then annually thereafter. With competency, where it varies from training is that it does require the use of all six elements of competency. And I'll go through what those six elements are a little bit later. But those are the biggest differences between training and competency. So both are needed and are necessary in our laboratories because, one, we want to make sure that our teams are trained to perform the task in which they were hired, that they are performing the necessary steps, following the necessary procedures to ensure quality results and make sure the patient the patient experience in regards to their testing is of high quality. So not sure why some people get the two mixed up, but they do form very, they are for very different reasons. Now, I have heard in laboratories where they will complete a competency assessment when a new instrument comes into place. So this is something that have come up, but competency is for the person. So the competency has to deal with the employee being a new hire or a continuous employee where you're assessing that competency post their training period. When you think about competency, competency occurs either during wave testing or non-wave testing. So if you are in a laboratory environment where you have wave testing, then competency will occur at least once annually during that first year period and annually. It does not require all six elements of competency for wave testing. And the laboratory director is the one, or their designee is the one that decide which elements will be appropriate when you are talking about waived testing. When you're talking about non-wave testing in regards to competency assessment, then this is occurring during the first year of patient testing, assessed semi-annually for that employee after training is complete, and then after annually thereafter. Now, it's important that I say semi-annually because before it used to be at 6 months, but the standard is updated. It says semi-annually, and the guidance that they give is between kind of that fifth through the eighth month, I think is the guidance for that semi-annual piece. And then for non-wave testing, it's reassessed, like I said, at least semi-annually during that first year of the employee's hire, and all six elements are required for the test system. And the test system is defined by you as the laboratory. So this could be the manual, automated, multi-channel, or single-use instruments. It can be reagents, components, equipment or instruments required to produce a result. So it's up to you on what you decide is your test system. Thinking about those elements of competency, because this is where people sometimes get into trouble where they don't necessarily assess all six elements of competency, but those six elements include the direct observation of routine patient test performance, the monitoring and reporting of test results, the review of intermediate test results of worksheets, the direct observation of performance of instrument maintenance and function, assessment of test performance through previous analyzed specimens, blind samples of proficiency testing, and the evaluation of problem-solving skills. And this is important for laboratories, one, to be in compliance, two, for patient safety, and so that the quality of the laboratory is there. It's the guidelines that help laboratories know what they should do in regards of training and competency. Ladies, did I miss anything of giving that high level overview of what training is versus what competency is?
You didn't miss anything. I probably don't have much left to say. I know I was going to talk about the regulatory, but let me see if there's anything left. You're so great when it comes to defining the difference, and you know the regulatory guideline so well that in your differentiation, I think you've actually covered a lot and a lot of the requirement that any regulatory agents would ask for. So I'm going to see if I can talk a little bit on the regulatory part. There's not going to be much more than what Taiwan already said, because she did a very great job showing the difference between training and competency. And it actually is saying what the regulatory requirement is asking us. And so I reviewed, actually recently I did a FAQ for my team, because just like Taiwana said, a lot of times we confuse training and competency. And I did frequently asked questions, and I answered it based on the regulatory requirement. And it covered a lot of what Taiwana just said. The regulatory requirement actually differentiate training from competency, and training is definitely defined as preparing the individual to be able to perform that skill before they start reporting patients, or before they, whenever there's a new instrument. And so you have to, before you start doing that, you have to ensure that if there is a procedure that is written, you are actually having a checklist where the individual is trained before they start reporting. And I think the main thing for the regulatory requirement is before they start reporting on the patient, and whenever there's a new instrument, they should be trained, and there should be records or documentation to show that they're trained. And these records have to be kept for at least 2 years. And for transfusion medicine, it's 5 years. So it's important to have these training records. And as Taiwana says, competency is different, because for training, you're making sure that all the elements that's needed to perform the test, the person can demonstrate that. However, with competency, as Taiwana says, there are just some elements that we want to make sure that whatever, if the individual is trained to do the task, they still can do it after their training. So for, according to the regulatory requirement for wave testing, a year after that person is trained, they're going to do a competency to make sure that they can, they remember the important aspects. So there are 6 elements that they're reviewing a year after they're trained to make sure that they're still competent to perform at the level that is expected. So the 6 elements would be like observation. They're making sure that they're observing you through the whole process. They're monitoring the record. And all of these is a requirement that you have to use those 6 elements if you're going to call it competency. So it's a regulatory requirement to use the 6 elements. Direct observation. You have to monitor to make sure that people are documenting and reporting properly. You review the records like QC, proficiency testing, and preventative maintenance records from that individual to make sure they're doing that properly. You're looking at maintenance. That's a direct observation to make sure that they're doing instrument maintenance and function checks. You're looking at maybe a blind sample. To give them a blind sample that was previously run to make sure that when they run that test, it's meeting a certain degree of accuracy, and make sure they can do problem solving. So based on the regulatory requirement, these 6 elements have to be met for that to be a competency. Some people say, oh, I'm doing an audit. But an audit is just an observation. That's just one element. So that's not competency. So regulatory requirement, 6 element for that to be a competency. Not a regulatory requirement, and I know Taiwana mentioned that also, is the test system. We want to make sure that if you're doing a competency, you're looking at a test system. And a test system is really the full process that's taken to do complete a test, from the pre-analytical to the analytical to the post-analytical, all those steps that's needed to produce a test result or a report. So it's possible to have, say, multiple, like similar analyzer. If they're similar, that would be just one test system. If they're really identical, that would be one test system. However, if they're different, then it would be a separate test system because it's a different methodology for the analytical part. Then that would be a different. So it's so important by regulation to identify your test systems, make sure they're meeting regulatory requirement, pre-analytical, analytical, post-analytical to produce a result. And if you have that same instrument that's running, say, a different type of test, say, for instance, it's a test that you would need a preparation before it gets on, that test would be a different test system because the process is a little different. So it's a little technical, but if you make sure you're looking at similar instrument, similar tests, and it's including pre-analytical, analytical, post-analytical in order to get a report, that would be a test system. So when you're doing your competency, you're doing your competency on all the test system that that person is performing a test. You want to make sure that they're doing the test, a competency. I know I mentioned wave testing. So for wave testing, they only need to do one competency every year. However, for non-wave testing, if there's a new employee that just came in and they just got trained, they got their training, they're ready to start reporting, then they would have to do a competency semi-annual. Just like Taiwana said, now the standard is saying it should be done at least 7 months, because there's a lot of confusion before where people were so hard fast, like 6 months. If it's like a few days after 6 months, you're out. Now they're saying semi-annual could go up to at least 6 months after initial testing. So after training is done and they start reporting patients, you can start counting for their semi-annual. And that is for non-wave testing. For a new employee, they'll have to do a semi-annual. And then they'll do an annual that same year, which is 12 months after that initial testing or training. Now, it's just about the same time when their training is finished and they're ready to start reporting. It's then it will be 12 months after. So that's a new employee, semi-annual, then 12 months. After that, they can start doing their competency annually. So a new competence will be done annually. Taiwana mentioned this also. A new competency is not done every time there's a new instrument or every time a new test is introduced. And I know that was a confusion for a lot of different labs. And even now, it takes time to clarify that. So just follow the guideline, semi-annual, annual. And then you have to remember for wave testing, there's no semi-annual. Unless your lab director decide, based on the complexity of your lab, that they want to have everyone doing, they can go above and beyond the standard, but not less. So if they want everybody to do a semi-annual, that's fine, but it's not a regulatory requirement. And then we already mentioned the six elements. That's a regulatory requirement, the test system. And then another thing when it comes to regulatory requirement is failed competency. If you fail competency, it's important for that person that fail any of those elements to have their assessor reviewing what they did. Whether it's going to be reviewing it by going over in terms of training, some people may not initially retrain if it's something that's easy that can be reviewed and retake the, you have to retake that assessment, but that has to be part of your procedure. However, if they're fail again and you realize that's a training issue, they have to be retrained. If they, anyone cannot pass that assessment, they cannot be put back on the bench to be testing until they pass their competency assessment. So that's so important in terms of passing your competency assessment. You cannot be reporting patient testing. One more thing I want to talk about is the qualification of a competency assessor. So there are people who are actually reviewing the competency, making sure that the employee, they're actually going through and doing their six elements, and they're making sure that they're doing their competencies through that test, each test system that they're performing testing. So that person that's reviewing and checking you off, they have to meet certain qualification. And that person is a competency assessor. Not only they have to meet certain qualification, but they have to be delegated by the director. So they have to be delegated in writing that you are an assessor and you have to meet these qualifications. So if you are an assessor for a high complexity testing test system from high complexity testing, you have to meet the qualification of a technical supervisor. So for high complexity, you would have to meet qualification for technical supervisor. For also, or a general supervisor, that's also for high complexity testing. For moderate complexity testing, you have to meet the qualification of a technical consultant. And there are certain requirements in terms of degrees that you have to be a technical consultant, a technical supervisor, general supervisor. But for if you're going to assess someone for wave testing or a non-testing personnel, that would be non-testing personnel would be maybe like a phlebotomist or someone that's not reporting testing, that would have to be determined by your lab. I know for my lab, for assessors, for phlebotomists, they would have to have passed their certification, but it depends on your lab to make that determination. I think that's all I have when it comes to regulatory requirements. If there's anything I missed, I think later on in the end, we can always jump back on that. So thank you so much. And I know that Stephanie is going to give us some great tips on how to have effective training and competency.
Thank you, Lona. You and Taiwana did just such a good job of explaining that. Anybody who was confused or fuzzy about that before, I hope you have clarity now. Because really, just in summary, during training, I'm showing you how to do something and I'm going to document that. And then when I assess your competency, you are going to show me that you know how to do that task correctly. And we're going to document that. Just a reminder that this is not limited to your technical staff. This includes your phlebotomists, your lab assistants, your couriers, and you don't want to forget those low frequency tasks. So based on your different job descriptions, you might have staff that are doing things like specimen handling, like Lona said, but there might be some safety precautions that you want to make sure that people have competency in, or if they're packing and shipping samples for reference laboratories, or even your computer system, or even some supervisory functions. So you want to make sure that you are encompassing all of the tasks that your employee does, and that you have an appropriate training and competency assessment program for that. In terms of how to measure the effectiveness of your program and make sure that you are being successful in ensuring quality training amongst your employees, first, make sure that you standardize. Make sure that you've got a standard process for training all your new employees when they come in. And it is even helpful sometimes to go as far as standardizing your trainers with staffing. And with our workforce shortage or crisis in the laboratory medicine field right now, I know that for every laboratory, that's not possible. But, really play on people's strengths. There are some laboratory technologists that enjoy training, that enjoy educating. And you really want your new employees to have a good experience during this training process and to have consistency during this training process. So try to standardize as much as possible. Also, keep it current. Make sure that your training files and documents reflect the current issues that the staff is facing right now. So, if you've got a new LIS system and they've got to flip between two different softwares to complete a different task, make sure that is reflective in the training. Ideally, you want to make sure that your documents are electronic. I know that's also difficult sometimes too. Paper is fine, but also, sometimes paper is hard to track, hard to trend, and hard to keep track of. So ideally, an electronic software that can keep track of your competencies for your staff, especially if you've got a large staff. We already talked about the intervals for when you need to do these competency assessments. To make it easy on you, you may want to try to tie these in with some type of annual event. So, if you know that the employees who need their annual assessments done, are in your lab, to avoid having these things done at the last minute, try to tie those annual assessments in with some type of annual event, like maybe their annual evaluation. I know in our laboratory for our nurses, there's a 365-day expiration on some of their software access. So we try to time that in with making sure that they renew their competencies with the same timed with the same as their access for those softwares. Reevaluate your program continuously when your staff fluctuates or when you have inspections or even when you're seeing continuous errors or non-conformances in your laboratories. And so you want to go back. If you've got a training program and a competency program, but you're noticing, on certain inspections, you're seeing these same citations or you're seeing these same errors, you might want to go back and reassess your training and competency program to add in elements that are frequently missed by your staff and maybe ask for your staff's feedback on that. If your staff is having a problem staying competent on a certain test system, you go back and assess that test system. Maybe the test is done too seldom for people to maintain their competency. And that's an administrative decision. Is that even a test we should have in our laboratory if it's done so seldom that people can't maintain their competency? So these are all good questions to ask when you're trying to evaluate the effectiveness of your training program. We like to use competency as an educational opportunity. So we like to ask people a lot of questions about troubleshooting or what would you do in these different types of scenarios to make sure that people fully understand how to operate solely doing that test system. And then always connect the steps of your training program back to a patient outcome or the quality of the test. So people understand why you're mixing that sample for 20 minutes. People understand why you need to pour that off. People understand why it needs to, sit or rotate or whatever the test requires. Sometimes things can seem monotonous to people, especially when they're doing repetitive tasks. But when they understand the why behind something and how that relates back to the quality of the test, then people are more likely to follow all the steps. When we talk about different laboratory opportunities, you can also look at having in your program offerings for continuous education. So try to promote continuous learning and knowledge transfer. Maybe if you've got technologists that are great competency assessors, have them maybe revise some of your procedures to integrate elements that would be helpful during training progress process, or look for opportunities for your employees to maybe do lunch and learns on different test systems, or share their knowledge. I think we've been pretty thorough on this topic. You know, do you ladies have anything else you want to offer?
The only thing that comes to mind for me for this topic is thinking about the makeup of your laboratories. Today, we are finding where we have more people than not at several of our locations that does not meet the requirements of an assessor. So we have more MLT versus MT or four-year degree employees. So I'm just curious to know how you all are adapting to that. And maybe it's not an issue in your laboratory, but I know in some of the rural laboratories, you have one MT for the whole lab. Mm-hmm. And so how are you all handling that, or any best practices that seem to have worked for you all at your locations?
I think for us, the thing is continuous, like I said before, continuously evaluating your competency program with your staff fluctuations. And so, like you said, right now, before it might not have been that way, but now, you know, we do have a healthy mix of both 2-year and 4-year employees. And that's where you have to shift and, you know, maybe look at your schedule for when you're bringing on your students, when you're bringing on your new employees, who you're assigning to train, and making sure that there is consistency in that person, maybe developing different job descriptions. Probably 3 years ago, we pooled one of our best trainers and created a new position, not new to our health system, because there are plenty of nurse educators, but there was not previously a laboratory educator. And we pulled that person to be a laboratory educator to further increase how we could standardize our training, how we could make sure that we were appropriately balancing students, clinical rotations, and new employees, and allowing both to have an equally good experience, making sure that we weren't taxing out one department that was already short-staffed with a bunch of trainees. But making sure that we could appropriately rotate. So there is a balance, but you've got to continuously know who you've got in your department and who you've got staffed, and who is able to do what. And so that takes a lot of pre-planning on your laboratory management's part. You can't, you know, haphazardly go into it, or else you'll find yourself in a crunch.
Yeah, I thought about that. Taiwana, we haven't gotten there yet. We still have mostly bachelors. But when I was reviewing the qualification, I thought about all the labs that may not. And I think the good thing about it is that most of these, you can do it with an AA. Mm-hmm. Most of the assessors can. And I went back, you know, this morning I was looking, I was like, kind of worried, like, how does the other labs that struggle manage? And I think that a lot of these qualifications start with a MO, MD going down, but I think a lot of them, you still can do it with a AA degree and certain amount of years of experience. So I think right now we're kind of safe. But when you move now to the lab techs, if you're not a degree, if you're not an MLT, then I think that becomes a challenge.
I mean, it does become a challenge when you're looking at things like training for point of care testings and all of those things, or mainly point of care departments where you have to be qualified as like a technical consultant, I believe. So,
yeah, that's the weird thing. Yeah, it's like it flipped in terms of the qualification. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I suppose one person is going to work harder. Hopefully they will be compensated, mm-hmm, with a little higher salary because they have a lot of responsibility. Mm-hmm. Hopefully we'll make that adjustment there. Another thing, go ahead, Taiwan.
No, I was just going to say thank you for that insight. And it's always good to hear what other people are doing if they're in a similar situation. And I think maybe that could be depending on where you are at in the U.S. of what you see, how many programs are available. But I do know for us here in Ohio that it is becoming difficult. When I entered the field, the ratio was more MTs or MLSs to MLTs, and it has flipped. Mm-hmm. So.
I heard Stephanie said something about looking at the errors that we get, or even the when we do our inspection, like where are we getting these problems? And I find like it's throughout, like competencies, usually no matter how hard you work, is usually something with that competency. And so what we started to do is do audits across mm-hmm. each lab section. We will audit the competencies, go through them to make sure, like, is there a recurring issue? Are people missing initials? Is the forms that we have, is there a problem with that in terms of filling it out? Can it be more user friendly? And so we do audits and we try to get it better and better every time, even though that's usually they're going to find something. So that's what we do. We do audits on our competency after they're completed, maybe once a year or so we start doing it.
Yeah, I think audits are great. Electronic versions of how you can keep your competency or employee files is amazing. Our lab was the same way every inspection. Somebody would find something wrong with the competency or an employee file. It just was a guarantee. We just started to bet on it, you know. And then when we went electronic, that became a lot easier. But to me also, when you start looking at your inspections and an inspector notices that there is a step in your procedure that upon observation, your staff is not doing, you know, is that step missing in your competency and training plan? Or if you're looking at your errors and we consistently have an error with, you know, people not documenting who they called for a critical value, is there appropriate training for that? You know, I made that up. That's not specific to our lab, but if you have an error, when you're doing your supervisory reviews that you continuously see, maybe somebody or everybody's skipping a step that you're continuously having to do corrective action forms on or do re-education on. Sometimes we think, well, I'll just re-educate. But, you know, maybe you need to go back to the way you're training people. And there's some gaps in your training program to where people are making those errors.
And using those also, when you say add it to your competency, maybe use that as a problem solving, troubleshooting question that you may ask the employee. If you already have things in place and people are still struggling with it, it may be something that you want to make sure people are competent. So that becomes something that you put as either a troubleshooting question, problem solving, or, you know, a quiz or something like that.
I mean, well, Taiwana works in chemistry. How many times do you review your reports and people ran QC 15 times? And you said, did you try to recalibrate, change the QC something?
Absolutely. See it all the time, or see it a lot, especially with newer techs and trying to figure out their troubleshooting. And even though we have policies and procedures and guidelines, it's still one of those things where it's like, I want to keep running and running and running it.
Yeah, I think we did a thorough job and on competency and training. Hopefully you've learned something, learned a lot today. So you can always go to our website, directimpactbroadcasting.com. Put your comments, ask additional questions, and we'll be there to respond to these questions. And if this was an exciting episode and you'd like episodes either similar to this or new episodes, you can put your suggestions on directimpactbroadcasting.com. So thank you so much for listening to this episode. We'll have episode coming up every Tuesday. And so listen to this on directimpactbroadcasting.com or your favorite podcast platform. And if you want to be a guest on the show, you can fill up our guest request form. You'll find that on the website to be a guest on the show, or send any questions as usual. So thank you so much for listening to this episode, and see you the next time around. Have a good one.
Thank you for tuning in to another episode of Elaborate Topics, where your hosts discussed relevant strategies for laboratory professionals. Please subscribe to this podcast on your favorite podcast platform and listen to us on directimpactbroadcasting.com. Stay tuned for another episode with information you can use to excel in your laboratory career.